shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt. Got a great guest for you, David Coburn, former Brexit MEP for Scotland. I'm going to ask him, well, what do you do after you stop being an MEP? Some people might say you never did anything while you were there. We'll find out. We'll also find out what his political ambitions are for the future. We'll get his views on the Brexit Party, the Tory leadership, Darek, Nicola Sturgeon. Do we need more coppers? Will Boris do what he says on the can? Or are we inevitably going to end up in a general election? Delighted to say that David Coburn, former Brexit MEP for Scotland, joins me now.
Shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon. Nice to hear from you again.
All right, let's get started. So what do you do, David? Once you stop being an MEP, how do you occupy your time and what's your ambition next?
Well, I was sort of very busy as MEP for 5 years. I didn't have a minute to myself. And I thought that once I'd stopped being an MEP, I might actually get a minute to myself. But that doesn't seem to be the case. I mean, nice people like you have me on the radio all the time, which is good. And I've been writing articles for paper. So I seem to be doing as much stuff before, post being an MEP, than when I was. So, you know, we're looking forward to, in the not too distant future, to an election. And I don't see there any way of avoiding that. And hopefully I'll be standing for the Brexit Party.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, you're obviously your ex-UKIP, then aligned yourself with the Brexit Party. How come you wasn't chosen to be one of the first Brexit MEPs, and were you a bit annoyed about that?
Well, two things. They wanted to have a new slate, new people, which is understandable. To be honest, I was quite interested in getting into Westminster. I had, a feeling, a very strong feeling, I still have it, that we're not going to be in the European Union very long. It's only been a couple of months. It didn't seem to be really particularly worthwhile. And obviously, when it comes to a general election, that's going to be a harder proposition than the European election. So it's best to get working on that now. And it's very difficult to do that when you're in Brussels. So all in all, it's probably a better thing I moved on to Westminster things.
OK, so you think there'll be a general election. Pan out how you see this happening then. Who's going to win the Tory leadership and why will it end up in an election by October?
Well, I think it's on the cards. Boris is going to win. But I think he's not going to be able to get things done he wants to do with the Remainer sort of infestation of the Houses of Parliament on both sides. For years and years and years, more and more Remainers have been put in there to the point now that nothing can be done unless we have a total clear out. So I think in order to break the logjam, I think it's simply going to have to happen. Otherwise, they're going to make his life extremely difficult and he won't be able to govern properly. And they'll try and foul up the Brexit experience, which should be a good experience for the country. It should be a profitable experience. But these people, like Dominic Grieve and all this crew, they just simply will not stop. They carry on trying to knife him in the back and knife all the Brexiteers in the back, which is all the more reason we must continue to have the Brexit Party. Otherwise, we will have the Tory Party will go back to where they were before. We need to be there with a sword on the small of their back, making sure they walk the plank.
Some people say the answer to it is that Boris should just suspend Parliament and get the deal through because they've forgotten they are our servants, not our masters. They've shown us, the people, no respect. So he should just suspend Parliament and get it through. Would you be in favour of that or not?
Absolutely, because I think that these people are not respecting democracy and the constitution and are playing fast and loose with the rules and regulations. So quite frankly, I think our side should do exactly the same. And if I were Boris, I would do exactly that. I'd push it right through as soon as I can. It's got to be done for the good of the country. It can't go on and on like this forever. I've got to understand why these people continue to defy the will of the people. They've never been democratic. There's always been this fetish about keeping us in the European Union, mainly because it's jobs for the boys. You know, once you've loused up the economy in the United Kingdom, as Chancellor of the Exchequer, you can be sent off to Europe to sit on an economics committee and get well paid for it. I mean, that's what it all seems to be about. But it's not done the country any good, and it's certainly not doing other countries any good. Italy's an absolute mess. All the Italian banks are going bust. Even Deutsche Bank's on the skids. So there's a lot of problems in Europe coming up, and we should get as far away from it as possible before the economic bomb goes off, really.
Okay, let me just be clear then what you're saying. Boris is going to become Tory leader, therefore Prime Minister, next week. You then think he can push through the Brexit deal, or even if he can't push it through, it's going to end up on a general election. But will we be out of the EU on Halloween?
One hopes so, but, he has given his word on this matter. I think he's gone so far in doing it, that failing that, he'll have to go to a general election to make sure it does happen.
Okay, if there is a general election, do you not fear that Comrade Corbyn could get in, or do you think he's done the proverbial on his chips now because of this anti-Semitism row? Talk to me about both aspects of that.
Well, I think that Jeremy Corbyn was never a realistic proposition. I don't think anybody really particularly wants him. He's even his own side. An awful lot of them don't like him. I just don't see the man having the gumption to get in. He seems to foul up regularly. Stuff he says is not what the British people want. I just can't see it happening. I think people will hold their noses and vote for the Conservatives or the Brexit Party to make sure he doesn't.
OK, so it'll probably be a hung parliament. Is there a chance then that Nigel Farage and the Brexit Party, James Delingpole put it very eloquently, he said, "I like the idea of Boris being in charge with Nigel Farage holding him by the..." What do you think about that?
Well, Delingpole has a wonderful way of putting things. I couldn't put it better myself. I think, yeah, so hanging on to his nether regions with a pin pulled out of the grenade in case he doesn't follow through, I think is a very good analogy. I think that is a good thing. I mean, it may well be that the Brexit Party become the government. That is entirely possible. Or they have to work together with the Conservatives.
Hang on a minute. I just want to pull you up on that. Are you actually suggesting that the Brexit Party with you in it and Nigel Farage leading it, you could actually form a majority government?
I don't think it's impossible. Look what's happened in a short period of time. The Brexit Party went from nothing to where we are now, and it's absolutely fabulous. I mean, the speed with which we managed to do that, I think everything's up for change. This is like 1848, the year of revolutions. Everything is changing. The status quo is no longer the status quo. People are revolting against the government, not just here in the United Kingdom. It's happening right across Europe. Look at Italy. Look at the Five Star Movement. Look at the Lega. Well, I think it comes out to Lega now, rather than Lega Nord. They are doing very, very well in Italy. You see what's happening in the Czech Republic. You see what's happening in Germany. Strange things happening there too, and in France. Again, very strange politics. The Gilets Jaunes, the rise of the Front National, a French president who came from nowhere, the choice of the big bank and the usual suspects in the EU, suddenly just arrived from nowhere and is singularly the most unpopular president the French have ever had.
Let me ask you a direct question then. So if we were to vote for the Brexit Party, let's not talk about getting out of the EU. We'll take that as granted. But what else are the Brexit Party going to offer the British public to make them think, well, I'll vote for Farage, I'll vote for Corbyn? I mean, for example, the union, HS2, prisons, cops, whatever. What are you going to actually offer us to vote for in a general election? And you must be beginning to know, because you've just told me it could happen at the end of October.
Well, there's one thing I always like to say, and I used to say it in Scotland before elections, I don't want to give out too much of what I want to be doing or our side should be doing, because all you do is hand it over to the enemy. Look at Boris. He just keeps grabbing Nigel's coals all the time. So it's not always a good idea to give too much information to the enemy ahead of an election, and we are close. So that's something you have to consider. But the thing about the Brexit Party, we want a new way of doing things. We want to obviously have proportional representation so that more voices are heard instead of two big block votes where things are decided in smoky rooms. I think what we want to do is see more political parties, more political diversity. I think that's a very good thing for this country.
Yeah, I understand that. But Nigel's now spoken about things like HS2. He's spoken about things like scrapping HS2, cutting foreign aid. Are these the kind of things that you think that will end up being offered to the British public?
Yes, I mean, it's all coming out slowly, but, you know, obviously not giving too much away. But yes, HS2, of course, is a waste of money. We're much better off building a better railway system in the north of England, which, quite frankly, doesn't work that well. You need to have cross Pennine stuff. Lots of things we could be doing with the money and railways we're not doing. And getting a northern economic powerhouse going is good for the whole country. You know, just leaving great swathes of the country with no money and no jobs and no factories is not what we should be doing. We should make sure that everybody right across the country benefits. And, you know, that's, I think, something we're about. We're about changing the dynamic that seems to be everything's decided in the southeast. We want to actually make sure that the rest of the country's taken along with us.
Okay.
And that's where things will differ from the establishment parties.
Okay, I understand that now then. So let's just look at some specific things there then. Let's just look at this situation about the Northern Irish backstop. That's still got to be solved. Is that a big problem, or is that a manufactured, a confected row?
This is the biggest confection ever. That's exactly what it is. There's no problem here at all. It cannot be easily solved. We've had deals with Ireland since 1923. They even get to vote in our elections. All the European Union are trying to do is to create a problem and invent a problem. And that's what the Irish backstop was all about.
Okay.
The Irish economy will go into nosedive if we leave without a deal. And after Mr. Varadkar and all his chums talking bravely about how Ireland was a European nation and you know, we are going to dish the Brits and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not working out very well, because now they're starting to realise that 40% of their exports are going out via the southern, you know, English ports. Yeah. So that's going to be, if there's going to be a jam up caused by the French, it's going to jam up the Irish too. So that's not going to be always as rosy as they thought. So they're back to rethink these things.
Would you pay them the $39 billion or not a single penny or a single cent? Tell me.
Not a single centime. I don't see why we should be paying this money. I don't see why we agreed to it in the first place. I've never seen such an appalling, I mean, I'm a businessman. I've been doing deals all my life. I've never seen such an appalling, pathetic deal-making as under the May government. I've never seen anything so amateurish.
I do want to go on to Theresa May and her legacy in the second part of the programme, so save that if you can. Let's just come back to Scotland. No doubt you want to stand as an MP in Scotland. Do you think you've got a chance against the SNP? And where's Nicola Sturgeon in this mix if Boris becomes PM?
Well, I think the SNP are finished. I think that if we get Brexit, it's the end for them. That's why she's getting her underwear in such a twist, because, quite frankly, she knows it's finished for them. Scotland needs to be part of the Union. There's no way they can become part of the European Union with separate from the rest of the United Kingdom. It will take years for that to happen, if at all. I talked to Jean-Claude Juncker about it when I first got to the European Parliament, and subsequently, and he said that Scotland would not be admitted as an independent country before Turkey. And I thought, well, that's not going to happen in the near future. So it's just not realistic. And she knows fine well it's not realistic. She's just trying to keep her troops happy.
And what about her ever getting a second, another referendum? I guess that's no chance in Scotland now. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. People just don't want it. Business doesn't want it. The vast majority of Scots don't want it. And when it comes to discussion about referendum and about what would happen after a referendum in an independent Scotland, they can't solve the money problem.
Okay.
And, you know, that's follow the money. And that's the answer to that. If you can't solve the money problem, it ain't going to happen. And that's the reason why the French and various other nations have to stay within the European Union, because they gave up their currencies to the euro. And that makes it very difficult for them to do what we're doing, leave.
You're listening to David Coburn on Shooting From The Lip with me, John Gaunt. It's Sputnik International. He certainly has started off at a pace, hasn't he? I'm going to ask him after this short break whether the Brexit Party will play well in Scotland. That's coming up next. We're going to talk about Theresa May's legacy. I think she's the most useless Prime Minister and the most terrible Home Secretary we've ever had, but we'll get David's views. We'll talk about having more cops. We'll talk about Murder One, which, of course, is London at the moment. And we'll talk about Donald Trump. It's all coming up on Shooting From The Lip with me, John Gaunt. Don't dare go away. We're back after this very, very short break.
Shooting From The Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here.
Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt. Shooting From The Lip.
Okay, you're back with Shooting From The Lip with me, John Gore, my special guest today, David Coburn, the former Brexit MEP. I'm talking to him now about Scotland. He thinks the SNP are finished. So I've got to ask the question, how will the Brexit Party play out in your country, David?
Well, I don't think the Conservative Party have ever been particularly popular in Scotland, well, not since the 1950s, really. It was the high water mark then. I think that it's too much seemed to be the party of the lairds, too much party of big business. And people are not happy about that. The Scots see themselves as being more liberal-minded, more, you know, it's more freewheeling than that. The old Liberal Party of Gladstone and such like was always very popular in Scotland. So I think that anything other than the Tory Party, which is pro-business, pro-jobs, pro-change party, a progressive party, if you like, hate to hear use that word because it's abused so much by our socialist brethren, we can offer them what they want, a business pro-business party without being the Conservative Party, and I think that's why we will go down better.
Okay, so you're pretty confident if you stood, you'd get elected?
But I would not presume to tell the electorate what to do in that way. I hope that they listen to our arguments and vote for us. I think that the arguments we'd be bringing up would be good arguments and the different arguments and not the same old tripe you get from the Conservatives. Ruth Davidson's not really a Conservative. I don't really see her as a Conservative. She's a Liberal Democrat. And I'm afraid that just doesn't seem to be working.
She is bloody popular, though, David, isn't she? She is popular. I mean, sometimes I don't really understand why, but she is popular, and especially with the MSM.
She's popular with the Conservative Party in Scotland, but I don't know if she's popular with people in general. I don't think, she's not massively, she's not unpopular, but she's, I don't know, she's offering half pint of what the rest are offering. She's not offering anything different. She goes along too much with the SNP and the Labour Party and all the rest of it. And, you know, about half of what they're having is essentially her motto, and that's not good enough.
Isn't that good, though? In Scotland, everybody has a half and a half, don't they? It's normally half a heavy and a short. But anyway, let's go on to the legacy of Theresa May. I'm saying she's the worst, well, the most useless PM we've ever had. I also say, before they start writing all the eulogies this week or going into next week, she was a terrible Home Secretary, and a lot of the murder and the mayhem and the anarchy that we're having on the streets of the UK is down to her and her stupid decision to cut 20,000 cop jobs. What's your view on Theresa May?
Well, I agree. I think she's the worst Prime Minister we've ever had. Some people say she's the worst Prime Minister since Lord North. I think she gave Lord North a run for his money for that title. I think that, losing the American colonies is nothing to the disaster she has given this country over Brexit. He couldn't have negotiated in a more cack-handed manner than she has. And nobody understands what she's about. Even her closest allies seem to be confused as to what she's doing half the time.
Did she give too much power to the civil service? I mean, unelected people like Ollie Robbins negotiating instead of David Davis, we're told, and Dominic Raab. Did she give too much power to that Mark Sedwell? You know, evidently, again, people accuse him of pulling her strings. Did she go to the civil service? And indeed, did this politicise the civil service to an unacceptable level? We know it started with Blair and Alistair Campbell, but what's your view of that?
Well, she's a born bureaucrat. bureaucrat. I mean, she would have probably made a very good civil servant herself. She seems incompetent enough. I think she'd make a good civil servant. And so they respond more to her way of thinking. You know, let's not make decisions. Let's fudge the issue. Every time I heard what she was saying, it always sounded like Sir Humphrey and Hacker discussing, you know, politics. It was like something out of yes, minister.
Hang on, they wouldn't have written that because some producer would have said, no, that's too far-fetched now that she's going to betray 17.4 million people. What do you reckon?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's beyond belief. But, I think she let Ollie Robbins run the whole thing. I don't think she knew what she was doing. She was in the hands of the civil servants and the Remainer bloc in Parliament and establishment, and she was their puppet, and you can see that now. Robbins is gone now, and now Mr. Kit Darroch and all these people are on their way out as well.
I want to talk about Darroch in a moment. Let's just go back to what I was saying about the police. I mean, I put a large proportion of the blame for the anarchy we've got. Obviously, Sadiq Khan plays into this. He seems to think he's going to cure the problem of nice crime with a ping pong table or a pool table. But she cut the police jobs. Boris says he's going to restore them. Is that something you agree with? And what needs to happen when it comes to law and order? Let's have your views.
Well, I don't think it's just a matter of the numbers in the police. Is restoring the police to being a force rather than what it's supposed to be now. It's just a joke. We need to bring back the word force rather than service. It's there to keep order. And I think that with all the political correctness, especially in Scotland, I can tell you that's another place where, you know, policemen I've spoken to say that they no longer can arrest people because they're too worried about the political correctness aspect. You cannot get people jailed, so there doesn't seem to be much point in filling out the paperwork. So it's more fundamental than just police numbers, although police numbers are obviously part of it. But if you're not allowed to, you know, arrest people and you're prevented from saying it as it is because of political correctness, and all this sort of, you know, the way you speak to people and speak about people, then it's impossible to keep order. Absolutely impossible.
Okay. Another problem you've had, of course, in Scotland, well, maybe not a problem, you may see it differently. They've merged all the Scottish forces, so now you've just got Police Scotland. Has that experiment worked, in your opinion?
No, it's an absolute disaster. I mean, when Peel set up the police service, the idea was that it was different regions would have different people in charge. That is to maintain democracy. The French didn't do that. The gendarmes are a national police force and more or less run from central government. And so there's no democratic aspect to it. And one force, you know, if there's a problem with one force, you can always get another force to look into that problem. Well, that can't be if all the forces have been merged as they are in Scotland. And then, of course, what complaint you hear from a lot of police is that the senior management of the police force in Scotland is wholly owned by the government. The government appoints them. You can't get promotion unless you toe the line. That makes it impossible to succeed or to be promoted on merit. It's all people who just, you know, tool the government line who get promoted.
Well, that's interesting because that leads us into the Darroch affair and also into Assistant Commissioner Tip to get the top job, Basu, and him this weekend telling social media people and indeed the Fleet Street Press, if you publish leaks, you could end up getting prosecuted under the Official Secrets Act. What do you make of that? He overstepped the mark, didn't he?
Of course he did. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And this is all part of politicising the police force. The police force used to be independent to a degree, obviously not completely, but it, you know, it had a certain, you know, they followed the law. And now the people at the top are so busy trying to get promotion but through being more politically correct and more holier than thou. And that's why we've got an ineffectual leadership of the police force. I think they all have to be removed. They're all singing from the same hymn sheet of...
Okay, so what did you make of the Darroch affair? Did we have a right to know it? And secondly, did Donald Trump react in the right way? And, of course, Theresa May stood behind Kim Darroch. Your views?
Well, Kim Darroch, you know, obviously you have to have ambassadors able to talk privately about what they find abroad. But the trouble with Darroch was so pro European. Nigel Farage had terrible trouble with him when he was in the European Union. He was just absolutely obsessed with the European Union. And of course, you know, all his opinions on the American president were prejudiced by that. He was absolutely opposed to Donald Trump. He's opposed to what I would like to call the new order, the new way of the new parties that are springing up. He's the apotheosis of the old system. And you know, backing the establishment to the hilt. So he is a disaster with an American president we're trying to do deal with over Brexit. It's important we have a very good deal with the United States. And how would you do that with a man who's totally opposed to Brexit?
Was he childish to come back at him in the way he has come back at him, or do you not care?
I think President Trump has his own style, which is definitely different. You know, he says what he thinks, whether that's always a good thing. He can be a little too truthful, I think, and that's a problem. He shoots from the lip, as you like your program.
We should get him on, shouldn't we? Okay, David, that's fine. Let's finish on a positive note. Got a couple of minutes left. What do you make of Alan Turing now being put on the £50 note? Are you in favour?
I'm in favour, but I think it'd be better if we put on a lower denomination note, simply because they get there's more of them about. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a £50 note, and nobody wants them because they're rather difficult to get rid of, and shopkeepers look at them suspiciously. So they're not a popular thing. I think Alan Turing did wonderful things. He shot in the war and saved an awful lot of lives, and was poorly treated, very badly treated, by his country or his sexuality. So I think it's a really good thing that he's been, you know, he's been commemorated in this way. I think it's a very good thing. Some of the stuff they're saying is becoming a bit silly, you know, sort of removing the convictions that people had in the past. It's, you know, is revising history.
Let me just clarify that, David, in case people don't know. You say that as a gay man yourself, that you think that's all a bit nonsensical, yeah?
It gets a bit silly when you know, changing verdicts from, you know, 100 years ago or 50 years ago or 70 years ago. And people had a different way of looking at things at that time, and the laws were different. So it sticks in the craw a wee bit. I mean, you know, it just seems a bit daft, but it's good to commemorate him, put him on the currency by all manner of means. Some of it can go a bit far with some of these things. It starts to look a bit ridiculous.
Let's just finish by posing you one question, 30 seconds. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future? Tell me.
I'm very optimistic. I think that's what Nigel started off with, or what Nigel took to the brink with the UKIP and subsequently with the Brexit Party. We have created a revolution in this country, an absolute revolution. And hopefully it's going to lead to better things, not just the getting out of the European Union. It's going to lead to a better way of governing the country, proportional representation, people sitting in Parliament, immovable blockages in Parliament. And the sooner we have an election and we clear out this blockage of pro-Europeans in the Parliament, who have been embedded there over 70 years, there's just been more and more of them shoved in there. We need to get rid of that crew and make sure we get a Parliament that represents the people.
Okay, David Coburn, shooting from the lip. He's the former Brexit MEP for Scotland. He wants to now stand for the Brexit Party as an MP. He was a great guest. We'll have another great one for you next week as well. Until then, you've been listening to Sputnik International, Shooting from the Lip, with me, John Gaunt. Thanks for your time.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.